You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
I mean, what's Pro Football Focus doing? Last week they had Brady. This week they got Brady.
We're doing it. We're literally doing it differently from everybody else.
Hey, as a matter of fact, moving forward from this point on, I will not make reference to PFL.
Do you not understand that they are that way because you're Joe Flacco?
And you just like to discredit things that people deserve credit for.
That you can't possibly be expected to defend that.
Talk about the game, Sam.
So,
who cares about what people think about us?
Yeah, I like football season, all the things that go with it.
So we're back here with Sam Monson. We are live here on YouTube. Thanks to everybody for tuning in to our midweek show, where we just talk about whatever. Whatever's happening. Mm-hmm. And there are some things happening in the NFL.
Live on YouTube and not live in your audio podcast destination of choice.
You're also live there, yeah.
No, not we're not live, live there.
Well, now, if you're listening to us, we're live to tape. Live to tape for you. Anyway, we're going to be talking all sorts of stuff. We'll touch on the Raiders, John Gruden issue, Lamar Jackson, because we don't always get to recap Monday Night Football. There's a pretty special performance by Lamar on Monday Night Football. Talk Seahawks and Russell Wilson, what they're going to do. Preview Thursday Night Football, Bucks-Eagles. But first, we have a very special offer for everybody, so you need to listen up. We have our own promo code, Sam.
Yeah.
For PFF products, we can give anybody 25% off. Don't tell everybody. It's a special thing, but 25% off.
Do tell everybody.
Okay, want this, because we can give it to everybody that's listening. 25% off any PFF subscription. Use the promo code NFLPOD. NFLPOD. That's our own special promo code, and it's just for you, just for our listeners and viewers.
Yeah, we get credit when you sign up, so use this one.
And we're all about credit here at PFF. We need the credit, so even if you listen to other podcasts, don't use their promo codes, use ours.
Yeah.
NFL Pod, NFL Pod. If you've been on the fence to get a PFF subscription, feels like a perfect time. 25% off, you get that 365 days of access, and it's NFL Pod for 25% off. All right, let's go around some NFL news here.
Well, we got to do the housekeeping first.
Do all of our housekeeping.
Got to do the housekeeping.
Start. Let's go ahead.
So, charity update. We've smashed through our goal. We are right now at $3,420 of a $2,000 goal. So it's definitely happening. We need to start planning this whole thing, figure out when we're doing all this sort of stuff. A metal bat has arrived. Yet to be opened, but it's in hand, sort of.
We need to do this like within the next couple weeks here before it gets cold.
Yeah.
I want to do it outdoors
on
a real mound. So I'm going to get that. We'll get a destination. We'll get it all sorted.
Yeah. So a metal bat from our friends at Stinger has arrived. Got to open that thing up. We will have a wooden one as well that has our logo and the charity's logo just for a display, a cool thing to have. But yeah, we're up and running. The link will stay open. There's still time to raise money for... to stop animals getting destroyed, you know, people giving back pets that they got during COVID and the lockdown and now just trying to get rid of them because they don't have time for them. A lot of those dogs get destroyed, dogs, cats, whatever, and that's sad. So the Best Friends Animal Society is striving against that, trying to prevent any animals getting destroyed. So raise money. We've got 3,420. We're going to try and get as much as humanly possible. And if you want to wait until you see how many times I get hit with a ball, that's fine too. But, you know, make sure you donate for that because the pain will be real.
That's what the PFF people are doing, right?
Yes.
Depending on how much you get hit, how often you get hit, they'll add money.
Yeah, which feels harsh, but okay. If that's the way you want to go, that's fine. And then the other thing we want to do is get some emails from you. So NFLpodcast@pff.com. Send us those emails because we use them to create some of the show, particularly the Wednesday show.
We have an email, actually. We have a question from a viewer later that we're going to answer too.
Right. So we get some really good emails from you guys. Keep sending them. We love getting your email. So NFLpodcast@pff.com is the email to send us stuff.
I mean, that's the theme here. We appreciate everybody. We get to give you your own discount on PFF subscriptions using NFL Pod. And we always appreciate the emails because we like interaction on the show. So we got to touch on the Raiders thing at least a little bit. Mm-hmm. I don't think we need to, I'm not going to spend a ton of time on it, but John Gruden is out as Raiders head coach. A bunch of emails came out. Every other network's going to be talking about this and having their own opinions and takes. Do you have an initial thought on it? Do we want to look at what's happening with the Raiders going forward? What are your initial thoughts here?
Well, the first initial thought was, I mean, yeah, he had to go, and he went. He saw that once the scope of this was coming out in its full entirety, that his position was untenable, and he resigned rather than, you know, having to wait till it was discipline or whatever was going on. So, yeah, even if you're of the opinion that, hey, look, everybody somewhere in their digital footprint, whether it's email, whether it's text, whether it's WhatsApp messages, somewhere, like this was circulated around with the Richie Incognito bullying stuff years ago as well. Like, there's an idea that every single human being has got something somewhere in their private messages, private quote unquote, that if it was made public would get them fired or disciplined or whatever. Even if you're of the opinion that that is true, they don't complete like the set. They don't hit, you know, insult bingo. They don't manage to tag every human being in the world and just light them on fire the
insult
way—
insult bingo?
Yeah, the way Gruden's emails appear to have. So even by that standards, what he did and what he put down was way over the line, and there's really no defending that. I think it feels like a waste of time and effort to try and do it. So it happened. It's whatever the motivations of where those leaks were coming from, it's done. Gruden's been got, and he's out. So now you've got the Raiders, who are without a head coach, Mike Mayock still in situ, and a season that was beginning to wobble anyway after such a good start, now is kind of really up in the air.
Yeah, I'm interested in the Mayock angle here because he joined Gruden was after year one, right, for Gruden's tenure there.
The Reggie McKenzie relationship soured.
Right.
And then they moved him off and moved him out and got Mayock in.
And we spend so much of our time, the whole offseason, talking team building, talking strategy, what do you do here, free agency, and the whole thing. And Gruden had a lot of power in that area.
Power, yeah.
We don't know how much Mike Mayock really had as far as power, the player evaluation part of it. We've also spoken here, the Raiders had a chance to completely reshape their organization from a football standpoint a couple years ago because of the Khalil Mack trade, because of all of those first-round picks. And they really have not hit on a first-round pick. And the early returns on Alex Leatherwood this year aren't great, but it's early, fine. But they haven't hit on any of these first-round picks, including Josh Jacobs. However you want to define hit or miss, they drafted a running back where even if Jacobs is great, it's not moving the needle enough to justify it. So that would be what I'm curious about here. Is Mayock going to be the guy going forward? Will he continue to have power? And what does that look like for the Raiders?
Well, certainly short term, there's a shift in the dynamic because Gruden had final say. Gruden had ultimate power in all of these things. Now Mayock has that. It might only be for a short term thing until they hire a new head coach or even if he survives that. But for the moment, for the first time in his tenure with the Raiders, Mike Mayock actually has final say on all the things that a GM typically has final say on. So, you know, it feels like he was probably going to get made a scapegoat if things went south and there was some blame needed to be thrown somewhere because Gruden was sitting there with a 10-year contract. You know, the talent acquisition hasn't gone well. So let's blame the GM, blame the talent guy, keep on trucking with everything else. Now, like, Mayock has a chance to be like, well, I never had say on any of this stuff, final say. You know, this is how I want to do things. You know, give me a while to, I'll go find your next head coach for you and, you know, give me a chance to actually run this thing the way a GM typically does. So I'm curious to see if Mike Mayock actually gets a shot to do the job that he's been hired for, or if he was only ever, you know, a right-hand man for John Gruden, and they're going to completely clean house within the organization.
Yeah, I'm with you. I want to see what that looks like. So far, the Raiders right now, if you just have Premium Stats 2.0, which you can get for 25% off now using the NFL Pod promo code, Raiders are 14th in our overall grades, and we've discussed quite a bit about the rejuvenation on the defensive side of the ball from a pass rush and coverage standpoint. I want to give the Raiders credit from a team-building standpoint. We've done this before, too, but Casey Hayward, maybe the best free agent addition so far this offseason. Yannick Ngakoue has been fantastic. Nate Hobbs has been a fantastic fifth-round pick at corner who has stepped into that system, played the slot extremely well. So even though we didn't love a lot of what they've done defensively, so far so good, I would say, for the Raiders. I also wonder how much, supposedly they knew a lot about this, the emails, they knew something on Friday that things were going to be coming out. And I asked, I mean, I think I was at a loss for words when I was like, what happened to the Raiders on Monday morning? I do wonder how much, you know, this was an issue, distraction or whatever you want to call it for their performance last week against the Bears.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of helped, right? I don't know how much of an impact it actually had, but it certainly wasn't going to help whatever they were trying to do. PFF's power rankings right now has them at 19th. And they're right around a bunch of other teams that kind of started off hot and then collapsed over the last couple of weeks. So Denver are there, Carolina are in the same kind of area, the Colts, who we expected to be better. Like, that's the sort of the area where all these teams that flattered to deceive but have since hit stony ground reside. And like, the Raiders have got some challenges now over the next few weeks to try and right the ship.
Because it's Wednesday and we can just go wherever we want with these things. By the way, Eric Eager, he put in one of our chats, this is the first time the Chiefs have not been atop the power ranking since when? Was it late 2019?
Long time ago, yeah.
Because remember in 2019, remember they won the Super Bowl. And this is why when you emotionally react to everything that you see from a is this team good, not good standpoint, you kind of miss the boat here. Of all the Mahomes seasons, the year that they won the Super Bowl was probably the most uneven one, right? Like, he got hurt during the season. It looks like they might lose it. They lost some games that they definitely should have won. And then the Chiefs, you know, they go on their run and they win the Super Bowl. That was the last time that they were not sitting atop the PFF power rankings. And the Buffalo Bills are the new number one, tied with the Tampa Bay Bucks. Both teams who are scheduled to play later in the season, by the way. But the new power rankings, Bucks and Bills, number one. The Chiefs are third, and the Baltimore Ravens are now fourth, in part because Lamar Jackson balling out on Monday Night Football against the Indianapolis Colts. What do you think of that Lamar performance? Just did not miss in the second half. Incredible comeback by the Ravens.
Yeah, he was really good, right up in other than the random fumble at the one-yard line, which is like the third or fourth time he's done that in recent memory.
That is the one thing, because he's already getting a lot of MVP hype. We'll talk about his credentials so far. He has fumbled to lose, pretty much, he lost the game, however you want to look at it, but his fumble in overtime lost the week one game against the Raiders. He had another fumble late in that game, and he had this fumble at the one-yard line against the Colts. Like, all that stuff's rolled into this evaluation, and that's why Lamar's PFF run grade, even though when he runs it, he's great, the fumbles are baked into that, so he's not an elite runner from a grading standpoint.
And those are, like, such huge high-leverage plays. Like, that play... very almost, but for a ridiculous interpretation of the rule. That play, very almost, was a 14-point swing. Like, it was running it in from the one-yard line to they returned it all the way for a touchdown. Now, they took the touchdown off the board when they decided that the lateral went forward. But that was that play, like fumbling the ball away, which, by the way, was not like nobody forced it. He just tried to switch hands and lost the handle. Like, that play almost was a complete 14-point swing in a game. That, I mean, that's huge. That's as big as it gets.
He also had a ton of plays in that game. As much as I like to say the mobile quarterback doesn't help your offensive line, it felt like in that game there were a lot of games, or there were a lot of plays where he should have been sacked. And he was maneuvering the pocket and not getting sacked. And he saved a lot of plays as well.
Where are you, by the way, on that lateral rule? Do you want to go rugby rule, or do you want to keep it the way the NFL does it?
All right, this might take a while. Let's get it. The Colts lost a game, or lost a touchdown because of physics. They ended up getting it, but they didn't.
Physics, yeah.
Because of physics. We'll talk about it in a second. Another week of the NFL season does mean another shot to win big at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. New customers can bet just $1 on any NFL game and win $100 in free bets if either team scores a point. That's right, if either team scores a point. The last 0-0 tie in the NFL was in 1943, so it's a no-brainer. If Sportsbook's not yet available in your state, DraftKings won't leave you empty-handed. Everyone can play for huge cash prizes all season long with DraftKings Daily Fantasy Sports Contest. And DraftKings is giving all new customers a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes with their first deposit. So download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code PFF. Throw down $1 on any NFL game, win $100 in free bets if either team scores a point. It's pretty simple. That's promo code PFF this week at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Must be 21 or older, New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania only. New customers only. Minimum $5 deposit and $1 wager required. One per customer. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. So what happened on the pitch? You have two people moving through space. One guy tosses it backwards, but because of the momentum of him running forward, the touch point from the throw to the actual touch point of when the other, his teammate, Darius Leonard, throws it to Isaiah Rodgers, when Rodgers touched it, technically the ball moved forward. I think that should have been considered a lateral. I think the player should throw it backwards in relation to where they are.
So rugby has been dealing with this for years because it happens obviously a lot more.
This is like your time to shine.
That's your standard pass,
right? Your time to shine.
So rugby has essentially determined that if the ball travels backwards out of the player's hand,
that's what I would do.
It's backwards, even if the ball itself travels forwards between being caught to the next guy.
That's what I would do.
And I think the thing is, it's easier to hide in rugby because the lines, there's only like four of them on the field, right? So the chances of the ball like crossing a line when a guy passes it are fairly small. Whereas in the NFL, there's obviously a yard marker every yard, and it's way more obvious when the ball does actually travel forwards. So they picked up on it like pretty soon, even though like there aren't that many laterals that happen. But I think that's a better way of doing it, right? Like if you pitch it backwards, it's a lateral, even if your momentum actually carries the ball forwards. That's just the way it should be, right? It went backwards relative to the other guy that was trying to catch it. So it's good, all fair.
So you think it was fine?
I think they should let it go.
Rugby rules?
Yeah. I don't think you should call it a forward pass, even if it travels.
What does the rule say? Because, again, if you say the player has to throw it backwards.
Yeah.
That's what Darius Leonard did. He threw it backwards.
Yes.
And then physics brought it forward.
Yes.
Dang fix it, physics.
Damn physics.
So, yeah.
His new physics sucked. I don't know. I haven't actually looked at what the wording is in the NFL rule book, but like rugby specifically introduced the phrase like backwards out of the hand to solve that problem.
Backwards out of the hand, I think. I like that. That's the way to do it. Going back to Lamar and the, again, I always joke, if you have a great game on primetime, boom, MVP. You know, it's just you vault to the top of the MVP race. Lamar may have deserved it, though, after this one. So he's up to number six in overall PFF QB grades, 87.2 passing grade. That's also, I think, sixth in the NFL, fifth in the NFL right now. Traditional stats are up there. Again, his run grade is down, not because he hasn't been great at running. It's because he's fumbled the ball too much. But what a finish statistically. 37 for 43 for 442 yards and four touchdowns. And that includes, in overtime, they drive down and score a touchdown.
The most important thing, I think, for Lamar the last couple of weeks is we have now seen a few games in fairly rapid succession where they have been put in situations where he needed to pass. Mm-hmm. And not just like needed to pass off the back of all the running stuff they do, like obvious pass down situations where he just had to drop back and pass the football. There was no, you know, faking the run. There was no play action, none of the complex stuff that hides or kind of creates these open throws. They just said the offense right now is you in a drop back passing system. And in the past, that's when the wheels have fallen off. And you get all those Lamar haters saying, well, if he could just pass the ball, he'd be a great quarterback. But since he can't, we know it's only a matter of time before they come unstuck against a good team in the playoffs. And he's not a Mahomes. He's not a whatever. But for the last few weeks, we've seen Lamar put in those situations where things have gone south before and he's risen to the task. He has passed the ball well. He has not had to hide behind all the various tricks that offense does. He's just been a drop-back quarterback, in addition to being able to take off and scramble and make big plays whenever you don't pay attention to it. That's huge for him.
So I'll tell you what I like here. For those who follow analytics Twitter and football Twitter and the whole thing, you are inundated with just a sea of people screaming, go for this fourth down, go for this fourth down, and run more play action, and all these things, right? And it's kind of like this first level of here are some things that smart teams should do. And as you hear Brandon Staley from the Chargers, the head coach, which, by the way, this is going to be a great matchup this week, Chargers and Ravens. But we talked about Brandon Staley's interviews, right, where he's kind of like on our side with a lot of those things. What happened in baseball years ago was the first thing that people were screaming from an analytics standpoint was on-base percentage over batting average. It was like, look at this stat, not that stat. And at some point, everybody caught up to that. So the point I want to make here, the Ravens have been this forward-looking team. They were early on the fourth down decisions. They're early on all this stuff. I think the latest analytical edge that they are looking at here, as everybody else catches up to going for fourths and all that stuff, is just chucking it down the field. And so here's your analytics. Throw the ball down the field. This is what's happening this year with Lamar. Average depth of target of 11, which is insane. I mean, that's bigger than Jameis's biggest years, and Jameis is that guy that's always been throwing the ball down the field. This happened in college a little bit. I always talk about the Baylor offense in college, where they said they created a run game, and then they spread the ball, they spread the field so far, and they just started chucking it down the field. They said, we're going to make everybody, you cover my fast receivers one-on-one, and we're going to run goes and curls, but the goes are what, and if we go 1-for-4 on a go ball, we have moved, we've flipped the field, right? And I think that is part of the Ravens' strategy here. And I have more stats for it, but I want to get your thoughts on this is the edge that they're attacking this year.
And 11 is way down, like this past game pulled 11.
Down from where he was.
It was up over 12.
Yeah.
And the only quarterback we've ever seen above 12 for a season was Michael Vick back in 2006. I think there's definitely something to the idea of if you do certain other things well, you can have an incredibly aggressive downfield passing attack as your primary passing system. I don't know that it necessarily works if you don't do a bunch of other things well. So Baltimore is good enough and efficient enough in the run game that you can do that as a primary strategy. In particular, you also have the scrambling threat of Lamar Jackson as well, where there's going to be a bunch of plays where the deep bomb isn't there or something breaks down. Lamar takes off and converts the first down anyway. If you don't have that, like if you just had a statue-like pocket passer and that was your system, we are going deep every single opportunity and that guy's no real threat to pick it up, I don't know if we're yet there where those plays are efficient enough that you can do that and nothing else and still have an incredibly efficient offense. But I think with Lamar, which is the story of his entire NFL career, he is unique enough of an athlete that you can do radically different things to everybody else.
Yeah.
Because nobody else can match, nobody else can replicate the player that you have back there doing that. Now maybe, you know, Arizona with Kyler Murray could do something similar. There's a couple of players now that might be able to execute a similar style of game plan, but Lamar, it's perfect.
Yeah, in this particular game against the Colts, it was completely different. The Colts played a lot of zone and the comeback was a lot of underneath stuff. Lamar making just decision after decision, accurate pass, and moving the chains, including, you know, he did have a bomb to Marquise Brown. So this game was different against this Colts zone-heavy defense. I just think it's interesting overall, this average depth of target of 11. He's averaging 9.1 yards per attempt. That's about a yard and a half better than his MVP season. Yard and a half, man. I mean, just in... and again, it might lead... If you do this over time, it might lead to a few more three and outs. It might lead... But it also, if you hit on one of those... It just immediately puts you into field goal range, right? When you hit a big-time throw, it's, I forget the exact numbers, but I ran it a couple of years ago. When you hit on a big-time throw, you score 60, 70% of your drives, right? It's just one big-time throw, and it does feel like the Ravens are taking more of those shots, but also integrating all of these receivers into the mix here. When Sammy Watkins, a little banged up now, but Sammy Watkins and his speed, Marquise Brown's speed, we'll see what happens with Rashad Bateman coming back. But their playmaker situations also... I think the best that they've had for Lamar.
Yeah.
And they're taking advantage of that too. So there's a lot of good things I think the Ravens are doing. But yeah, my big takeaway with this Colts game and a couple other games this year was when they had to pass, right? It wasn't relying on the run game. I think they're showing they can win in different ways, which is our biggest question for the Ravens every year.
And that's a key point that they've been succeeding with this obvious passing situation offense, despite not having Bateman. Like Bateman was the guy that was potentially supposed to transform what they were doing on offense from a passing point of view, and he hasn't played yet. Like, in theory, the ceiling could be even higher for what they're doing.
We already answered the MVP question. By the way, can we give full disclosure on the daily? We do have to record those a little bit before they come out. So we didn't add Lamar to our daily MVP discussion the other day. It was posed as, is Justin Herbert the MVP leader. You know, I think Herbert's in the mix. Don't sleep on Tom Brady, our highest graded quarterback, who's been fantastic this year. Lamar's in the mix. Kyler Murray, absolutely in the mix. Maybe Derrick Henry. But we did answer a lot of the MVP questions on Tuesday morning.
Tom Brady's overall PFF grade is 3 points higher than any other quarterback.
And which is pretty significant at scale, this point in the season.
The higher you go on the scale, the harder it is to get 3 points higher than anybody else.
Yeah.
So for Brady to be at 93.4 and nobody else to be above 90.3, I would find it pretty hard to give the MVP award to anybody else. He's also the only quarterback above 90 from a passing grade standpoint. Russell Wilson's at 89.5, Kirk Cousins at 88. Then you're Herbert, 87.6, 87.2 for Lamar. Brady is just far and away the best graded player. And even in the loss to the Rams where everything kind of went south, Brady played well.
Yeah, he still played pretty well in that game. And don't worry, because it's all about primetime games, and he has one against the Eagles, which we'll preview later in the show.
It almost feels like Thursday shouldn't count as primetime.
Yeah, Thursday's not always primetime. It's not like the real bright lights.
It's prime time, but it's not prime day.
You know? It's not prime day. That's right. But it is football season, baby. And you know what that means. I'm just reading what they tell me. It means we're going for two here with the sponsors of today's show. It's Manscaped. Blitzing through hairs has never been easier, and it's time for you to join the 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped by using promo code PFF at manscaped.com. 20% off plus free shipping. That's what you get. It's three and out the window with all other trimmers. Now go tame that Wildcat offense. That's right. We've been here since the beginning with the Lawnmower. The 4.0 is special. Lawnmower 4.0. It's brand new. It's here to take your defense to the next level. This fourth generation trimmer features a cutting edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents thanks to their advanced skin safe technology. I love that they've got the trademark on all of this stuff. How can anybody compete with Manscaped? The Lawnmower 4.0 is a 7,000 RPM motor, new multifunction on-off switch that can engage a travel lock, and it gives you the ability to turn the 4,000K LED spotlight on and off when you need a more precise shave. And what everybody has been commenting on and real fans of is the fact that it's waterproof. So any kind of weather doesn't really matter. The Lawnmower 4.0 is always going to work.
I mean, that's the game changer, really. Like,
they know what the marketing keys are here.
I can't tell you how many times I've been ready to shave my nuts in the rain, and you can't. It's just there's no trimmer that'll do that.
There was no trimmer that could do it
now
until
there is.
A good product solves pain points.
What a weight off my mind that is.
Your pain point is solved here. And there's no 15-yard penalty for this clipping.
No, there's none.
You get 20% off and free shipping with the code PFF at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. They also have a bunch of other stuff over there too, but use the promo code PFF and stiff arm your pubes out of the playoffs this year with Manscaped. That's what you're going to do. If you're on YouTube here, don't forget to give that thumbs up, because I just gave a great Manscaped read. The thumbs up is for the great Manscaped read, our sponsors of today's show. I look very presidential. You got to speak with them.
Like a tight thumb? Can't.
Yeah, this is how they definitely learned that in like speaking school and stuff there, right?
Yeah, the tight thumb.
When you're making a point. I had teachers used to always do that. Professors, teachers. They got to all learn from the same way. Hmm. Just like baseball umpires, they always run with their elbows really high, just like the option guys.
I had a teacher once that had like perfected the art of clapping so that it made like a sonic boom rather than just a normal clap.
Oh, I could.
And
do that.
He used to like wander, you know, the aisles of the class.
And do that.
And then if you weren't paying attention, right? If you'd like dazed off and were daydreaming and staring off into space, he would come like right up behind your head and just whoop, bam, next to your ear and just like burst eardrums on you. Wasn't fun.
Yeah, that doesn't sound fun at all.
Particularly because, you know,
I should have stuck with the tight thumb discussion.
I was known to daydream from time to time.
Daydream. Not enough coffee back in your university days, whatever it
was. No, like school, high school type day.
How did I function without coffee as a kid? I don't know.
When you're a kid, you have like a natural caffeine. You don't need that stuff. You're just wired anyway.
All right, let's talk. Do you have any other thoughts on Lamar? Are we on to Russ?
I think we can be on to Russ. I mean, Lamar is playing incredibly right now. I think the most important thing for his game is the fact that he has demonstrated that area that he hadn't really tapped into before, which is, look, when this offense isn't functioning great, and look, that's the other point to raise, that all the things from last year that we were concerned about, the offensive line is not what it used to be, the receiving weapons are not what they could be, the scheme, you know, maybe has started to get figured out a little bit, all those things still exist. And all of a sudden, it doesn't matter because Lamar is actually executing in the disadvantageous situation. So even though Ali Villanueva is out there just hemorrhaging pressure, the lowest graded player on that offensive line.
Just take out his week one game when you're doing that, okay?
I did. I checked. I went and looked. I was like, oh, how much of that was just that one bad game? No, it's bad.
I'm not here to overreact to 5 weeks.
So look, even though Villanueva's out there, you know, olaying the defensive ends and sending the pass rush at him, he's still able to execute and be fine.
One other point I wanted to make, we always discuss, it's not linear growth all the time. Lamar was not better last year than he was the previous year. Mm-hmm. But he, if you look at this year versus a couple years ago, there are elements of his game that I think he's getting better at. You know, he is getting a little bit better. I also don't want to overreact to just, you know, the last couple of games. He struggled a little bit as a passer weeks one and two against the Raiders and the Chiefs.
The one last point to bring up, by the way, is that, you know, we've made this point for a while now. Baltimore's schedule gets pretty ugly down the stretch, right? So they've got a few more games to build up some wins, because the final seven or so get kind of tough. Not yes. Unwinnable tough, but, you know, it's going to get more difficult.
And it's huge that they pulled out the Lions game. They pulled out this Colts game. It is huge that they've gotten to 4-1 here.
Like, if you look at to date, they've had the 23rd most difficult schedule, so pretty easy. And down the stretch, they have the 9th most difficult. So they flip from having a reasonably easy start to the year to having a pretty tough one.
And as I'm looking at that, for the people that are overreacting to the Chiefs, they've had the 2nd most difficult schedule to date, the Chiefs.
Yeah, so. And these are on PFF's power rankings. So if you go to pff.com, the betting tab at the top, and then down to tools, NFL power rankings, you can see all this data.
And all those things are fluid, right? Because we learn more about teams every week, and it's all fluid.
Yep.
Let's go to the Seahawks here. How screwed are they?
Very
Geno
screwed.
Smith taking over for Russ.
Very screwed, yes. I mean, look, nobody leans on their quarterback as much as the Seahawks do with Russell Wilson, even though they're in this weird world of, you know, not trusting him 100%, they need him to do what he does. And if they don't have him and they have to turn to Geno, who looked okay, by the way,
when he
came in, it still feels like they don't have enough everywhere else. Like, Russell Wilson has a 90 grade. Two guys on the roster outside of Russell Wilson are above 80, and everybody else is various shades of, you know, not great. That now has to function with Geno as your quarterback, which just feels like a tough sell.
They're 2-3. Even if Russ is there, we're still talking about, man, the Seahawks are 2-3 in this tough division. The point differential is negative right now because the defense is rough. I mean, I'm skeptical if they can make the playoffs with Russ, right?
Same. So to me, the most interesting thing is, okay, the Seahawks have no Russ. They're probably screwed. What happens, though, if Geno comes in and looks reasonably good and the offense doesn't suffer a massive drop-off? Because
there's a couple what-ifs for you.
Because I speculated, or we talked about this a little bit before the season, which is I don't think it's as easy as people are saying to just, you know, let Russ cook, hashtag, right? Because what does that actually look like? What Russ is best at is those deep, high-risk, high-reward moonball passes that create touchdowns out of nothing. But and also, you know, extending plays and running around behind the line of scrimmage and creating a window that wasn't there with the play design. The problem with that is that every single quarterback in the NFL, including Russell Wilson, is worse under pressure than they are when kept clean over any extended period of time. So your game plan can't be to basically say, Russ, take the ball, have a 7-step drop, do whatever the hell it is you like doing back there, and then find a dude to hit a bomb to. Because it'll happen every now and again, and when it happens, it's great, but it's just less efficient than operating a normal offense the way everybody else does it. It isn't a good way of functioning, right? Even if it works, it's leaving meat on the bone, do something else. But if that's how Russ works, like if that's where he's happiest, where is the balance point between leaning into letting Russ be Russ or trying to set him up in, you know, ways that make the entire offense more efficient? So there's a weird world where Geno Smith comes in, is a functionally more prototypical quarterback in terms of how he plays the game, and the offense as a whole becomes easier to operate because they're taking the easier stuff that Russell Wilson often eschews and goes for the deep shot.
It's an interesting thought. I do think these few weeks could end up, is this too much? Is this too extreme? It determines Russ's future in Seattle these next few weeks. Because if they struggle, because you're painting an optimistic picture.
Well, people have already been making the joke of like, what if now, like even at, like out of spite, what if Pete Carroll now starts to call the good plays, right? They've been screwing Russ for years, and now with a different quarterback, they start, well, now we've got a different quarterback, we have to call all the good stuff, otherwise we don't have no shot. And they start calling these good plays, and Geno Smith looks good. I think there might be a kernel of truth in that, but it's couched in bullshit. So what if instead of like, oh, now we can break out the really good plays we've just been putting to the side, well, because Russ is the quarterback, what if the motivation is essentially, now we have a quarterback who doesn't excel at the crazy high variant stuff that nobody is good at except Russell Wilson, and we actually have to have a more conventional offense, which is just a more effective way of playing offense. So you end up in the same place, right? But by a completely different motivation and like way of doing it. But the point being, like, what if this isn't as big a drop-off at quarterback as people are expecting it to be? Not because Geno is not a way worse quarterback than Russ, because let me be clear,
secret plays though, man? I mean,
that's what I mean. Like, people are saying they've got like, you know, some crazy awesome plays that they just aren't running. But what
they're
if
just
it's
always going to pass on early down?
Right.
Like,
but what if it's just they have more quick game stuff on first down and they make everybody's life easier because you're picking up 7 yards on a, you know, on a slant combination on first down instead of running the ball into the teeth of the defense? Like, my point is simply, there is a massive gulf between Russell Wilson and Geno Smith as quarterbacks. But what if the production from the offense isn't as massive as that should produce? What does that even tell you about Russell Wilson going forward?
I mean, look, if that is the case, then I don't think Seattle's itching to get rid of Russell Wilson, but I think it's, you know, we could get to the offseason again where he's unhappy, right? And he wants to get traded. And maybe if you're Seattle, you're more likely to move on. And okay, we've seen the world without Russ. We could probably find a better quarterback than Geno Smith to run our offense, but we had success with Geno for 4 to 6 weeks or whatever that looks like. I'm more inclined that maybe it goes the other way and Seattle appreciates Russ a little bit more.
That's also possible.
Here's my one concern. Geno Smith, average time to throw, 3.05 seconds. So about 3 seconds in his career. That's career-wise. And for the 1,000th time, the reminder, and I see this on Twitter a lot, when people say time to throw, that's not the time that the offensive line gave the quarterback. That is the time the quarterback spent holding the ball. He dictates this number. Geno Smith holds the ball longer than most quarterbacks. Usually the people, though, they're in this 3 second range are guys like Russ, Aaron Rodgers, Patrick Mahomes. Mahomes has a balance because they have a lot of quick game, but he'll, on third downs, he'll hold it long. Guys who are going to scramble, Lamar, Josh Allen, guys who are going to scramble, make things happen. Geno Smith is not that guy. Because of that, I'm worried about him behind the Seattle offensive line, right?
Yeah,
which isn't great. It's not as bad as it's been during Russ's time in Seattle. Not great.
If you go to PFF Premium Stats, which you can get for 25% off,
NFL Pod, NFL POD,
that promo code, we have the sort of overall average time to throw number, which, as you say, is skewed by quarterbacks that run around and like to scramble and those kinds of things. So right now, nobody's taking longer than Trey Lance at 3.4 seconds, essentially, which is an eternity.
That's a crazy number.
Lamar Jackson at 3.14. Then you get, I mean, Zach Wilson is third, which is its own problem. But we also have it broken down and have just the times to attempt. So strip out the plays where they're scrambling and therefore taking a bunch of time before you cross the line of scrimmage, and just look at the plays where the ball eventually gets passed, an eventual pass attempt. And everybody drops below 3 seconds, but you get a better picture of who's just taking an eternity with the ball in their hands without having it skewed by running around and eventually taking off and scrambling. It's still a lot of the same people. Yeah. But I'm just saying you can tidy it up a little bit with that number.
And you can use it in Premium Stats. So I've got some concerns about Geno. I just wonder if this is a disaster for Seattle, if they're like, okay, we definitely can't move on from Russ. We're never going to trade him. He's our guy forever. Or if they do have some success, to your point. And what does this new offense look like? I mean, again, I keep thinking Pete Carroll's going to go back to this. We got to run the ball more. I don't know what this offense looks like. Geno's not a great quick game guy either, you know? So, and I don't think they're built for it, to be honest. They are built to, even though DK Metcalf's running a different route tree this year, but they're best off creating big plays with him, big plays with Tyler Lockett, And then working the underneath stuff with their new additions, Dee Eskridge and Gerald Everett.
I think they could be built for it, though. Like, they just haven't been. Like, that is a receiving core that seems to be perfectly functional to me with quick game stuff. And I always come back to this idea of, remember when, for like the first half decade of Andrew Luck's career, it was a lot like the Russell Wilson thing. It was like, Andrew Luck, we don't have to worry about everything because Luck will make it happen. And we let him drop back, we let him find the play, and we let him make something special happen. And then there was one year where they just went, you know what, you're going to get the ball out of your hands lightning quick, and we're going to see how that works. And A, Luck was perfect, because that was the narrative as well. Like, Luck's just not really a quick game kind of quarterback. It's not really his style. Like, until you went, look, this is what we're doing, suck it up, you're going to start firing the ball out of your hands lightning quick. And he was amazing at it. And if anything, you know, people have talked about this before, like, part of these easier throws and quicker throws, it's like a mental break for the quarterback. You're not asking him to do as much. Like, it's easier. You don't have to be operating at the same level as you do when you're trying to figure out if this 40-yard bomb is going to split the safeties or if there's a disguise on the back end. It's like, look up, see if it's open, hit it. And we talk about that with the run game as well. Like, Brandon Staley made that point with the run game, that it's a complete break for the quarterback, which is important. Like, the idea of integrating a lot of quick game stuff to the offense, I think, has benefits that should be apparent. And yet, they haven't done it with Russell Wilson. But what we don't know is if they have tried to do it, or if, like, you know, have they simply not given him the option and instruction to do more of this stuff? Or have they been trying to do that, and Russell Wilson stylistically skews away from that stuff anyway? And there's a bunch of, like, you know, the way in week one, we were like, well, the Cowboys barely ran at all. And then Kellen Moore was like, we called 14 runs that Dak checked out of at the line of scrimmage. It's like, I'm not criticizing him for that. He was right. Like, he got the look and went away from it. But the point is,
yeah, the look was Vita Vea and JPP and Jack.
But the point is, like, these were called. We were planning on running the ball more than we did.
Sure.
Now, is that the same situation with Russell Wilson? They've actually called a bunch of quick game stuff that Russell Wilson has simply ignored and taken a deeper shot instead.
Even just five-step rhythm throws and stuff like that haven't always been Russ's game over time. We'll see if they do incorporate that more. That's the other thing, too. I think that for the people who, for like the let Russ cook people, like just let him chuck it 40, 45 times a game, I think there's also an element of when he's been limited, because so much of his stuff comes off play action and it's deep and it plays to his strengths. It helps make Russ look a little bit better because they're playing to his strengths, perhaps, and not putting maybe as much on his plate. But I'm interested to see what happens with Geno, what this offense looks like. Here's the one other note I'll say. Coming out of the preseason, Sean Mannion was running the offense. Geno was running. They were throwing to running backs quite a bit. That's also not really Russ's thing, right? He likes to feature wide receivers. He likes to throw the ball down the field. We might get a shorter passing game. We might get a little bit more of that because that's what we saw in the preseason. But this is the first time Russell Wilson's missed games, man.
Yeah.
Since his 2012
NFL career.
I always say durability from a quarterback. It is their
availability.
Skill. No. It's part of their skill set. This was a freak injury. You can't avoid, like, the hand injury when you're going through, you know, and you follow through.
Your two best abilities are durability and availability.
Durability and availability, huh? Mm-hmm. Your best ability is being good at football. Mm. Or whatever you're doing.
Is it?
It is. It is. Okay. That's your best ability. That's what helps the team the most.
I mean, that's not what the saying goes.
No, it's not a good saying. Talent beats availability.
Best ability is just being good?
Just being good. Mm. Being better than everybody at quarterback. Russ has done a really good job, though, is what I'm saying, of staying healthy throughout his career, obviously. But he knows how to not take big hits, and he could play his style without really putting himself in danger.
Right up until the mallet finger.
And then you get a little mallet finger. Means you're going to throw 100-mile-an-hour lasers at people's knees. Yeah. Like Ryan Mallet.
Okay.
That's what it means, right? All right, let's get to Thursday Night Football. People will ask, why don't you preview Thursday Night Football? The people are asking. But it's because we do it here on the Wednesday midday show.
When we remember.
Or when it's a decent enough game. So Bucks and Eagles, it's in Philadelphia. Bucks coming off a 45-17 win against the Miami Dolphins. The Eagles coming off a comeback win against another NFC South team, the Carolina Panthers. Staying alive in the NFC East. Eagles at 2-3. What do you make of this game here on Thursday night?
I think it's an interesting game. Like, the Eagles, I think, are clearly a better side than a lot of people thought they would be before the season. But they also have a lot of variance packed in there where it can go quite extreme in either direction. Like, I think if they, if Jalen Hurts has a high end game, which I'm actually more confident in being within his range of outcomes than I was a year ago, where I was like, yeah, I mean, there'll be some high end plays, but I'm not sure he's even capable of a high end game, like, altogether. I think he is capable of those now. But they kind of need him to string one of those together for them to actually beat a team like Tampa Bay or even just, you know, most good teams in the NFL. And there's so many of those plays that he's been leaving on the table the last few weeks. You know, week one was incredible, but it was against the Atlanta Falcons defense. Since then, he's left a bunch of those plays on the table. And if they hit on them, like, they've had a bunch of bombs to Devontae Smith that he hasn't connected on. He's missed Jalen Reagor a couple of times. There have been a huge amount of plays. And they're those field-flipping plays that we talk about with Lamar Jackson. If he hits on a few more of those, suddenly the Eagles become way more dangerous to anybody, but particularly a team like Tampa Bay who've been banged up with their secondary.
Yeah, Tampa Bay's coverage grade just continues to drop. They're down to 14th now in the NFL.
But they're finally getting some of those players back. Like, Jamel Dean is full participant in practice. Should be getting back. That will help.
Yeah, it should help. They've faced... I saw people talking about this too. I mean, the Bucs are on pace to give up the fewest rushing yards like in NFL history.
Despite the 17th game.
And the Eagles, as much as I thought they were going to be the high floor, Jalen Hurts in the run game type of offense, part of it's game flow, having to play catch up against the Cowboys and the Chiefs and last week against the Panthers. They've had to play from behind, but it's been a really pass-centric offense in Philadelphia. So you're probably going to see more of that. I do think that is the way to attack the Bucs. You know, the reason why Dak was checking out of those plays is the Bucs like to pack the box, make you throw the ball out on the perimeter. So it's going to be, hey, Jalen, go win this. You know, 40 dropbacks. Go ahead and win this game. And again, he's been a little up and down. Like, he had week one where he picked apart the Falcons defense, had some, but even in the Chiefs game, he left a lot of plays on the table, but he kind of facilitated that comeback against a bad Chiefs defense, but he still had to make those throws, make those plays. So I'm interested in Hurts and his development and what he does against a Bucs team that's going to make him beat them, basically.
Yeah, I do think that when Philadelphia gets their entire offensive line back and healthy, they are a much different team. Like, that gives them such a better platform to be able to run the ball more, to be able to keep Jalen Hurts collected and calm and unmolested in the pocket. First couple of weeks of the season, that offensive line looked incredible, and then injuries started to hit and they've had to reshuffle and move guys around, and it's not as good when they have to do that. So I think they'll still be without a couple of them, or at least one of them, in this game. The sooner they can get that back to 100% healthy, I think that materially changes how good the Philadelphia Eagles offense is.
On the other side of the ball, you mentioned earlier, Brady, top graded quarterback so far this season. So he's thrown the ball really well. He's been great. He also has the number two grade against zone defense, 93.2 passing grade so far this year, and that is what the Eagles play. They have brought in a defense that plays something like 7 or 8% of their snaps are man coverage. So as little man coverage as any team in the league, which is probably smart against the Bucs anyway with all their weapons. But it is going to be one of those games where the Eagles have been picked apart defensively in several games this year, in at least two or three games. Two games? Probably the Chiefs and the Cowboys mostly. But Brady will have those opportunities. It's going to come down to, can the Eagles put pressure on them? Because that's their strategy. We're going to rush four. They got the number three pass rush grade in the league. It's a consistent, that's the one thing that's remained the same in Philadelphia, is the defensive line can still get after it.
You think losing that game against the Rams was actually a really good thing for Tampa Bay? It kind of like took a ton of pressure off and almost sort of sent them under everybody's radar. It's like, the Rams are now the team to beat in the NFC, and the defending Super Bowl champions are banged up, and we don't need to sort of pay too much attention to them right now. And all of a sudden, okay, so you scrape by the Patriots in a bad weather game, right? And, you know, a bad weather game in a game where Bill Belichick and the defensive mastermind that he is had to have been massively invested in trying to do everything humanly possible to slow you down. So the fact that they just got that win, I don't even care that it was a close game. Let's just put that one to the side. But you then absolutely wax the Miami Dolphins the next week. Now you've got Philadelphia, Chicago's after that. Like, they could start absolutely steamrolling their schedule. And all of a sudden, you know, we wake up two-thirds of the way through the season, the Bucks are like 10-11 or 10-11-1. And their one hiccup was like a game against the Rams, who played really well.
They're being a little slept on just a little bit. Yeah, I think there's – I mean, it's really tough to go undefeated, man. It's really tough. And even the 07 Patriots, who go 16-0 in the regular season, as Patriot way as they are and as focused as they are, like the pressure of just going undefeated got to them at one point. So you're going to lose at some point. It's okay to lose a game. And I think that's why I still – after the Rams game said the Bucks are probably the best team in the NFC at the end of the day. And I think they will be unless they beat themselves, you know, unless Brady slows down, they have injuries offensively, or if that secondary gets so depleted and so hurt that it comes back to bite. But like you said, some of those injuries,
yeah,
you know, I mean, they're coming back.
That's going to end up being a strength because those guys are already coming back now, and you bolstered it with Richard Sherman, who is a pretty good emergency, you know, insurance policy.
Still trying to get his football legs under him.
Right. And even if he never gets those back, like even if he doesn't get back to being anything like the same player he was before, it's still a lot better than like turning to some guy you just activated off the practice squad from nowhere. Like Sherman's experience and savvy and knowledge is going to take him a long way in an important game versus a guy that just isn't up to that level.
The one other piece here for the Bucs, I don't think Gronk they're flying They're flying out there today, I believe it is. So he's like is he on the plane?
Did not participate in practice, the last report. Probably isn't going to play.
Probably isn't going to play, right? He's got the cracked ribs. They've actually run the ball better and more efficiently the last couple weeks. Leonard Fournette looked decent these last couple weeks. He's actually forcing a few missed tackles. I don't know if that – we don't want to overrate a couple games, but he just looks a little bit better. It's an added weapon because he has been so clunky catching the football. But Brady trusts him, and it's just another, you know – yeah, you want to throw the ball to Antonio Brown, Mike Evans, and Chris Godwin and everybody, but it's just more – that's why Brady threw for 400 yards and 25 first downs the other day because Fournette was a part of it as well. So the Bucs could be getting even more dangerous here.
It's also a really fun matchup in the trenches between Philadelphia's defense and Tampa Bay's offensive line.
Yes.
Which has been a good unit. Philadelphia's defense has been really good as well. Like the Brandon Graham obviously gets injured. Fletcher Cox, I think, is kind of on the way out at this point, but – those guys are being replaced by the players that they've sort of stockpiled in recent years. Javon Hargrave is playing out of his mind right now in that kind of Fletcher Cox power rusher type of role. Josh Sweat has 13 total pressures and a really good pass rushing grade right now as well. Like, they've got players that are generating pressure, like Derek Barnett. Derek Barnett is in the world of like Harold Landry. Both those guys kind of disappointing compared to what we thought they would be in the NFL, and yet both just continue to kind of truck along and get a ton of pressure without ever grading well. I'm not quite sure how they achieve that, but they're getting pressure from a lot of different sources at this point and making an impact up front.
By all accounts, that's the Eagles' strategy has been pretty consistent, though, right? We're going to play zone defense. We're going to make you we're going to try to avoid giving up big plays, continue to earn it, you know, going down the field and trusting that defensive front to win. So that battle will be huge. If the Eagles do end up getting to that, even a 30% pressure rate on Brady, 30-35% pressure rate on Brady, then they might have a shot here. I do like the Bucks to win. You know, I think they're a much better team. I didn't get the line on this one just yet. Did you get the line on this?
I will click on it now. Seven
on the road. Bucks on the road Thursday night game. The home team generally has a chance to keep these things a little bit closer than expected, right? When they're big underdogs. Philadelphia could keep it close and cover.
Yeah, the number two team against the number 26 team in PFF's power rankings.
Defense, tied for first, Bucks, actually.
Okay, tied defense is a lot closer. Their offense, it's 1 against 18. I think ultimately, like, Philadelphia might keep it close for a while. I then think Tampa Bay pulls away and covers the 7.
All right, give me Bucks win and cover as well. Brady's got a banged up thumb, but he should be full go, should be fine. He hit another. That was three quarterbacks, Russ, Stafford, same game, and then Brady all hit their hand on a defender. Russ, obviously, the worst with the mallet finger. Get the mallet finger. All right, we're going to wrap it up with we had a question. Where did this? Oh, we do have breaking news, actually.
Oh, yeah?
Paul Gutierrez from ESPN just spoke with Raiders owner Mark Davis. He says, "I have no comments. Ask the NFL. They have all the answers." That was the quote. But the other part of this tweet that is significant and answers our question earlier also confirmed that Mike Mayock remains GM and now has 51% control of roster decisions.
What?
With interim coach, is it Rich Bisaccia?
How do you determine a 51%? What?
Well, because what the old breakdown was Gruden was 51%.
Okay, but Mayock, 51 is 100 in this scenario. Like, this is...
Yeah, it's like ownership.
That, no, it isn't like ownership, because you
Mayock
can sell...
just earned two new percentage points here. He goes from 49% control to 51%.
That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard.
Just starts cutting?
This is not a percentage thing. This is a binary, do you have final say or
zero?
Not? Yes or no.
So like, it sounds like
yes,
Mayock.
I do. That's 100% of the decision-making ability. Like, Rich might be able to chip in and throw his opinion in there.
He can
but
chip
ultimately,
in 49% of the opinion.
Right, but ultimately I'm going to say, sorry, we're doing it my way. Like that, there's no 51-49 in decision-making and personnel in the NFL. There is, do you have final say or not?
So Gruden,
yes or no.
So what this tells us is it confirms what we all knew. Gruden did. He had 51%, Sam. Didn't have 100%.
Only 51%. Okay.
Gruden had final say, and now Mike Mayock has final say.
Right.
On roster decisions.
Okay. I already knew that, and I'm not buying any of the additional information, which is 51-49.
You don't care about the 51-49.
Well, I care about it in terms of it's absurd.
It's just yay or nay. What does 51% mean? Because if you sell shares, you only get 51%, you don't have 100%. You have 51%.
Yeah, the way it differs from, you know, shares in a company is you can sell those and it makes a material difference. It's not, the decision-making part is the same.
Maybe Mayock can sell some of his decision-making power.
You think?
You know, like if his daughter, Leo, wants 10%, he could throw it to her. Then he'd lose power.
Yeah.
But the Mayocks would still have power.
Okay.
Over Rich. Yes. Anyway, Mayock's making the decisions for the Raiders. Thanks to everybody on YouTube. Give us that thumbs up. Don't forget, helps it go viral. We're going to answer, where did this question come from? It's about cornerback run defense.
It came from the email box that we want people to send mail to, nflpodcast@pff.com. I can't locate it right now, though, so I don't know who sent it to us. So apologies for losing your name. But some guy basically emailed saying, look, in this world of passing is king and coverage and all, nobody cares about the run game anymore. So should we be waiting run defense for cornerbacks less than we currently do? Like, why is it such a powerful element of cornerbacks overall grade? And it's not like clearly we wait towards coverage,
right?
But it does make a difference. And the reason it makes a difference is we dug into this. If on any play where a cornerback gets a -1 grade in the run game, the average carry goes 13.5 yards. The average one. And that's just on any play where a corner is getting a -1. Not even
Which is a rare play, by the way.
Yes. They don't happen very often. But the point is, like, does it matter if my cornerback is Antoine Winfield? Not hugely. Does it matter if my cornerback is jumping out of his gap or getting pancaked or bailing or missing tackles in the run game? Yes, quite significantly. Because anytime he does that, it's averaging 13.5 yards. And if it's averaging 13.5 yards, you know, bear in mind short yardage and all those kinds of things, it's going to have a lot of big plays in there. So
yeah,
those are important plays. You need a cornerback to be able to keep his head above water in. Like, you don't need him to be a dominant run defender, but you can't have him just being a complete catastrophe out there.
Yeah, that's the big part, right? When they're rare plays, but offensive coordinators spend a lot of time. The Bucs are a good example of this. They run a lot of duo. And the whole point of duo is to get your running back isolated on a corner. I mean, a lot of run concepts are like, all right, I don't care what happens in the middle here. If you bounce it out, you're isolated on a corner. That's a win for the offense because you're going to juke him and average 13 yards per carry. That's the whole point. So you want a corner out there who's at least going to hold his own. And a -1 grade for us in run defense is when you lose contain or you whiff on a tackle. Not to the leverage of the defense, but, you know, completely whiff or whatever it is. So they are bad plays. They might happen rarely, but they're big plays, as we said, 13 yards per carry when a cornerback has a -1. And think about that, if you know, giving up 13 yards per catch would be pretty significant. Most corners give up less than that. So when they have a bad play in the run game, it is as significant as a poor play in coverage, even though they just happen a lot less.
Yep.
So there you go. Good show, man. We're right around an hour. That's perfect.
Tyler tells me there was some Sam Monson for Raiders head coach talk going on in the YouTube chat.
Really?
I'm in if I get Mark Davis's new house. I'd do it for that.
Would you need 51% control to take that job, or you just want the house?
I'm okay with 49%. Mayock can...
Even though it's really 0%.
Yeah. I'm just going to go out there and coach, Steve. I'm going to take the ingredients I'm given. I'm going to cook up something special.
What would you cook up with this? With now I'm curious. You going to run my coverage scheme that I talked about?
Just no, God, no.
Cover the
no.
Heat
we want
map.
We want to win.
You don't want to cover the heat map.
I don't want to. No, I don't.
You like Gus Bradley's cover three variations here?
I don't want to take input from you.
Okay.
I feel that would be disadvantageous to us winning games.
What would you do with Damon Arnette with your 49%?
Cut him.
If you're 49% decision. Uh-huh. What if Mayock says, well, I'm not cutting him?
Well, you see, you have a – I would appeal to Mike.
He's 49% cut.
I would appeal to Mike that, look, this is a rare opportunity to be able to get rid of all the dead weight and blame it on the other guy. You know, that doesn't come around very often, right? Like, usually you're stuck with what you got.
So a power
move
by
we can clear house here. And blame somebody else.
And buy himself, even if he wanted all these players.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Look,
get rid of everybody.
Mike's going to come in, he's going to say, look, that was actually my guy. Like, that was my call. Look, Mike, nobody else needs to know that.
Yes.
Like, we can right. cut his ass tomorrow and just blame the last guy in the building. They don't need to know that you were the one pushing this.
So that's what you would do.
That's what I do, like, face to face. Like, look, Mike, let me get you.
So Mayock's going to buy himself this. 3 or 4 more years here mm-hmm. by putting all the blame on Gruden.
Yeah. Never mentioning him by name because that would be classless. You have to like insinuate it. Like, look, we were dealt some mistakes were made in the past and we're going to move on past those mistakes. We're not going to point fingers, but this is all about moving forward now. And to do that, we have to cut all these guys that suck.
I appreciate that you're my podcast partner. I know you'd never hang me out to dry. You just want 51% control of the podcast.
I'm willing to give you 51%. I'm just going to light you up behind your back. That's how it works.
Yeah, I can tell. Pretty stand-up guy you are here, Sam. Things went wrong on the podcast. Oh yeah, that was all Steve's fault. Yeah.
No, you don't mention my name.
Oh, don't do that. Yeah, do it tactfully.
Mistakes were made, but
tall guy with the oversized shirt, and he did it.
Right. His decision. Look, mistakes were made. I'm just gonna say I only have 49% of control. So evidently the mistakes were made by somebody that has a larger control than that.
Look, I love our Wednesday show. We hope you do too. Thanks to everybody for tuning in. We'll be back here tomorrow previewing all of the Week 6 action. And don't forget, we've got 25% off any PFF subscription for you. It's NFL Pod, NFLPOD. Go to PFF.com. Right now, type in the promo code, get you 25% off. Don't know how long we'll have this. This could be the last day that we have it. I'm going to tease that every single time. It's always going to be the last day
I see.
That we have it.
Smart.
Anyway, thanks to everybody for tuning in. We'll see you guys tomorrow.